Looking for a quality car wash without breaking the bank? Mr. Magic Car Wash offers daily discounts and will have your car clean, shiny, and dry in just minutes. Visit MrMagicCarWash.com today for more information about our services and to find a location near you.
Our Bridgeville location has now reopened with new equipment and an improved automatic process. Check out Mr. Magic Car Wash at any of these five great locations: Brentwood, Castle Shannon, Banksville Road, Upper St. Clair, and the newly reopened Bridgeville. Mr. Reuter Plumbing with 24/7 emergency service and weekend service at no extra charge. Why call Mr. Reuter first? Free estimates. You know the price before we start. Fixed right the first time. Clean, professional technicians, and all work guaranteed. Residential services include complete plumbing, repairs, clogged drains and sewer cleaning, faucets and disposals, toilets and water heaters. Drain cleaning services include trench, sewer and water line replacement, pipelining and video inspection. Mr. Reuter Plumbing, 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Service when you want it. Red carpet treatment, make the call, 724-553-3355 or 412-567-1222. Online at Reuter2.com. That's Reuter, the number 2.com.
In the nation, we make wise investment choices. We work hard for our money. We want our money to work even harder for us. At Nationwide, we have products and solutions to help you and your family build for the future. Contact Nationwide's Rich Garland today at 412-678-8868. That's 412-678-8868 to find out if your money could be working harder for you. Auto, home, life, bundle up and save up to 25% off. Nationwide has more discounts on home insurance so you can save more money. Combine your auto, home, and life policies and you could save up to 25% off. Plus, you'll get our famous On Your Side service. To learn more about combining your policies, call Rich Garland today at 412-678-8868.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
And Steelers, 365.
Quarterman, the brothers. With the Steelers. Steelers on three. One, two, three.
We talk Steelers and more Steelers 365 days a year.
Style points don't matter. We win the game. This is a legendary defense.
On Live Radio.
The Steelers are alive. They're very much alive at 5-4. 38-35 at Heinz Field yesterday. Ken Laird, Josh Taylor. Brought to you by our great friends at Mr. Magic Car Wash with five convenient locations to serve you in the South Hills. Also brought to you on Trib Live Radio by Mr. Reuter Plumbing, Reuter2.com, Reuter the number 2.com. And brought to you by Rich Garland and Nationwide Insurance at 412-678-8868. Russell Baxter, our friend, joins us at about this time every Monday. We always love it, a trip around the National Football League. And start, though, here in Pittsburgh, Russell, what were your take from afar on Steelers and Raiders and how this sets these two teams up for the stretch run?
Well, first things first, I always like your intro, and you get to hear Mike Tomlin, I believe, from Super Bowl 43, and he mentions the fact that style points don't count. This is a legendary defense. It's safe to say we didn't see a legendary defense yesterday.
No.
And especially on the part of the Oakland Raiders, which I don't think people realize. The Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday gained 597 total yards in a regulation football game, not overtime.
I mean, right.
That's a lot of real estate. And, you know, you can make a case as maybe Pittsburgh's worst defensive game of the year. But I also want to give credit to the Raiders, who certainly are headed in the right direction, certainly on the offensive side of the ball. Derek Carr looks sharp. There's been so much talk about Amari Cooper, guys, that I think, well, somebody has gotten shortchanged. And it was, you know, you heard a lot about him during training camp. And Michael Crabtree has had a great bounce back year, and maybe having the best year of his career, which is saying something. A couple of years he had with the San Francisco 49ers. He had a big day yesterday. He's had a big year, period. And, you know, I credit as much Michael Crabtree doing what he's doing as helping Amari Cooper. I mean, that's become a very potent duo. That being said, I saw the hit of the year yesterday, and there were some savage hits by the Steelers yesterday who really up their game in terms of physical football. They forced four turnovers yesterday. But the hit of the year, at least in my mind, was, and I know he came back later and had the sack on Ben Roethlisberger, Did Alvin Smith realize where he was playing after D'Angelo Williams dropped him yesterday?
Oh, it was great, wasn't it? He obviously
that
did because he came back.
You heard that, or you heard that. You didn't hear it on your television. You heard it on your phone.
Yikes. Yeah.
You know? You thought so maybe you probably heard that noise and thought you had called waiting. Okay? That was impressive. And by the way, in D'Angelo's spare time, he managed to run for 170 yards and two touchdowns.
It really was a great performance by D'Angelo. And, mm-hmm. and Antonio Brown got Steelers records 17 for 284. Like, wow.
17 for 284. I don't think he could have gotten that on Madden.
And there were missed opportunities.
Listen, he's a different kind of guy. Okay? I can't think of a receiver to describe him as. I'm not saying he's an all-time great. I'm just saying you always look at a guy and you say, oh, he emulates him or he emulates him. I'm not sure who he emulates because he's a really fast punt returner playing wide receiver. He, after the catch, is pretty magnificent. And the move he made yesterday, which in essence won the game, that little grab he took from Landry. Boy, I'll tell you something, Landry Jones, he hasn't played much, but boy, does he get the most out of those quick passes.
Yes,
he does.
You know?
Well, and they blitzed him. They gambled.
I think he threw about 3 yards to Martavis Bryant, and he took the rest. And yesterday, just that move was, and it was almost similar to the Martavis Bryant play against Arizona a couple weeks ago, but it wasn't a great throw. And Antonio, I think the thing that makes him so dangerous is the fact that he knows what he's about to do just before he does it. And there's no way that means the defensive back doesn't. And, you know, if it weren't for Charles Woodson saving the day, you know, getting him out of bounds, 17 for 284. I mean, 17's a great performance on its own. The 284 is one of the best performances overall. That was a lot of fun to watch, and certainly a departure from the old Steelers-Raiders games of the 70s.
Yeah.
Russell, Mike Tomlin said that he wasn't surprised that the Raiders played man-to-man on Antonio Brown. They did it a lot. Were you surprised that the Raiders played a lot of man-to-man on Antonio Brown?
No, I think Al Davis told his son, Mark Davis, that as long as we own the team, you have to play man-to-man on everybody. Okay? Yeah. The Raiders have been playing man-to-man since 1960. Okay? Please tell me when you saw the Raiders play zone.
I don't remember it.
Wow. No, they don't. They just don't. I mean, they don't. There are certain things in life we take for granted, you know? And the Raiders play man-to-man. They've always kind of played man-to-man. I mean, let's be honest. But I'll tell you, you have to be impressed with that team, okay? That was a tough spot for them yesterday. They're down 35-21. They came back and tied the game. I know Ben got hurt and so on. But still, you know, that's a team with a lot. Remember that team was down 33-0 to Cincinnati in week one, lost 33-13. Think of how far they've come since then.
Do you give the Browns any chance against Landry Jones and this Steelers defense next week?
Because Johnny Manziel will run around and tucker them out a little. I don't think there's any question about it. To me, it's a crucial game for the Steelers. They've got to be able to hold serve at home. They've already lost two home divisional games, okay? And on the surface, it's Cleveland not playing well and 2-7, and they never win there. Well, I mean, they have won there. I don't think they've won there since 2003, okay? But, you know, that's the kind of game you can't let slip away. It's a dangerous game for the Steelers, considering they're coming off 38 points. Once again, it's the third string or now the backup quarterback. It's going to be a game, guys, I think is going to have to be won by the defense. And if Pittsburgh can get themselves to 6-4 and then get that week off, and I would be probably a little surprised, unless there's a setback, that Ben Roethlisberger would be back for the Seattle game at Seattle. And then quite the stretch run the Steelers have, to say the least, some of their opponents. They have the Colts, they have the Broncos. They have their share of games at home. It's funny. This has been such an intriguing year for the Steelers because we just haven't seen them. It's like building that 500-piece puzzle and you're getting stuck at 498. All year. I mean, think about how long has it been, you know, all year we've been kind of waiting for Bell to get back and then Bryant to get back. And then once they got back, the other guy wasn't there. And then another guy gets, I mean, it's really been, you know, it's almost been a what-if year, and yet they're still in the playoff chase.
Yeah, you almost give up hopes that it will ever come back all at the same time, but
yeah,
it doesn't
but,
mean...
But I will say this, Ken. When they are together, their offense rivals any in the league, and that includes New England.
Hmm. Speaking of New England, one of our emailers, Jim, said, can you ask Russell what he thinks of his dream matchup, the Cheaters versus Green Bay in the Super Bowl, after Green Bay's latest loss?
Well, my matchup was the Patriots versus the Packers.
Oh, he'd prefer to call them the Cheaters.
I'm confused by the guy who asked it. I know there's a Jaguars, okay? And there's a Panthers, correct?
Yes, you're right.
I didn't know the Cheetahs had a team. Is there a Cheetah?
Yeah, Cheetahs, yeah.
Yeah. No, I've never heard of the Cheetahs. Is that like the Charleston Cheetahs?
I think so, yeah.
Well, no, I think that would not be... When I said that and about their dream matchup, that was as much about the league's dream matchup as anything else. The first team to win the Super Bowl, the last team to win the Super Bowl, both undefeated. Listen, New England is still playing very, very solid. I'll be curious to what the prognosis on Deion Lewis is. Their offensive line is still a little banged up. Green Bay's defense has been exposed the last couple of weeks. I know a lot of people are pointing at Aaron Rodgers, but you know Aaron Rodgers pulled on quite the comeback yesterday as well. So, listen, we've never had 16-0 and 16-0. One can dream. And by the way, it might not be the teams I thought, but there's still at least a chance we could have two undefeated teams. And I will say this. I think, again, there's so much football left to play. And we don't know what these teams are going to look like in 2 months. But everybody keeps on talking about New England going undefeated. It's almost like they've shortchanged Cincinnati and Carolina. The kind of football that Carolina's playing right now, I could see them running the table. I don't think there's any question about it.
Russell Baxter, our guest, pro football guru, at Bax Football Guru on Twitter. That's Bax Football Guru on Twitter. Are the Colts about to take off? A couple of their playoff players said as much after the game yesterday in their big win over Denver, giving them their first loss.
That's nice of them to kind of wedge that in there. I don't know what you really saw from the Colts yesterday other than their offense, which it didn't even occur to me until someone earlier said it to me. You know, they switched coordinators, mm-hmm. Pep Hamilton out, Rob Chudzinski in. Obviously, Denver wasn't prepared for that, gave them problems early on. To me, the Colts look like the Colts that they have for the last 3 or 4 years. What I was really surprised yesterday, guys, was, how does Denver get back into the game and by the end of the game have 14 rushing plays against the Colts?
Right.
Why are you not running the ball against the Colts, especially after you managed to even the score? So, you know, the Indy's off this week. They play Atlanta, at Atlanta, and Atlanta's having their own issues right now. They can't rush the passer, and it's catching up with them in a big way. So I don't know if the Colts are ready to take off. I don't know if anybody in the AFC South is ready to take off. I'm sure there are people around the league that wish all four teams would take off.
Take off the rest of the year. Yeah.
Take off and go fishing, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who in that division is scary? I mean, you realize yesterday the Colts, I'll talk about first. Colts were the first team to score on Denver in the first quarter this year.
Wow.
The Broncos had not given up a point. And yet, the Colts yesterday finally managed to beat a team outside the AFC South for the first time all year.
Well, Russell, it's interesting you mentioned Rob Chudzinski being the new offensive coordinator. One of the local writers in Indianapolis asked Andrew Luck if he felt like his performance cost Pep Hamilton his job, and Luck said he felt like it had something to do with it. Moving forward, I mean, does this start with Luck? I mean, we've heard, you know, shoulder problems maybe bruised. We've heard broken ribs. It's been back down to bruised. Can we expect this going forward with Luck, or is he going to continue to have up and down days?
I don't know, because as far as I know, his shoulder wasn't bruised last year, and he turned over the ball 22 times.
Right.
Okay, 16 picks, fumbled 13 times, lost 6. And I'm not even counting the fact that he threw 2 picks in the divisional playoff win over Denver. He threw 2 more picks in the AFC championship game. I'm going to start calling him potluck, because it's a turnover. I mean, he didn't turn over the ball yesterday, okay? Granted. All right? You know, but it's not been a good year for him, okay? He's 2-5 at the start. Let's not forget Matt Hasselbeck led them to 2 of their wins.
Yes.
Okay, he has not played good football. Last year, he led the league in touchdown passes. Going into yesterday, he led the league in interceptions. So, I understand when the writer asked him that, and I think it sounds like that Andrew gave a very, very honest answer.
He did.
Okay, because he has not taken care of the football. I've said this before to you guys. I've said to other people. You look at those turnover numbers, and those were Jay Cutler's. We'd be vilifying him. For some reason, we give, no pun intended, Andrew Luck a pass.
Hmm. You ever poked anybody in the eye by accident? Honest mistake? Great quote from Aqib Talib, who went in on the Colts tight end and said, "That was the heat of the moment. It was an honest mistake. He acted like he got in an 18-passenger car wreck." I don't know. It was just, he got flagged for the unsportsmanlike conduct. But
the only person I know who accidentally poked somebody in the eye by mistake was Mo Howard against Gurley. Okay? Because if you know anything, I saw a movie a couple of years ago about the history of the Three Stooges. And what they explained was, boy, what a segue, that they hit the brow of the head to make it look like they poked each other in the eye. Obviously, they weren't poking each other in the eye, okay?
Right.
So if Mo accidentally poked Curly in the eye, it truly would be an accident, okay? Sorry, Aqib. You reached into a guy who had a face mask on and found a way to get his eye. Okay? It's not like, and you guys will remember, the offensive lineman for the Browns who got the flag in his eye accidentally was a fluke.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? That was an accident. That was an accident. Orlando Brown, I believe that was, right?
Yes, it was.
Great memory.
Yeah. Okay? That was an accident. How on earth could you call that an accident? Does he get fined? Does he get suspended? To me, after all we've seen, I'd give them both.
Last one from me, Russell. Bills-Jets on Thursday, pretty big implications for the AFC. Which of these two teams do you like better coming into the matchup?
I think I like the Jets because I can't figure out the Bills. And this, to me, will be the big question because this is always the question when it comes to Rex Ryan. We see it when he plays the Patriots. He's more interested in beating Bill Belichick than he is winning the game. So, I put it to you, Greg. Is Rex Ryan more interested in getting revenge against the Jets, or is he interested in winning a football game?
Good question. He says it's just another game.
You can't tell with them. I mean, they go out and I hear a lot. It's funny because I hear a lot of people saying, "Well, we finally saw the Bills yesterday. Tyrod Taylor was healthy. LeSean McCoy was healthy." That hasn't been the problem with the Buffalo Bills. The problem with the Buffalo Bills has been their defense. Okay, and their defense at home, which has gotten riddled by Tom Brady and Andy Dalton and Eli Manning. And this pass rush that we thought was going to have 942 sacks this year has been subpar. What happened to Buffalo's defense? That's what I would ask. And I really would like to know because the last I heard, Rex Ryan was a defensive guy.
Hey, Russell, bringing it back around to the Steelers and the Raiders here. When you take the four divisional leaders out, Indy, Denver, New England, and Cincinnati, can you pick a top two teams remaining in the AFC, or did we see them both here yesterday?
I don't shortchange the Jets. I know defensively they've given up their share of points the last three games, but they did get four more takeaways yesterday that brings them up to 19. I still kind of like where the Jets are headed. Now, using that logic, I know Oakland beat the Jets, so you could certainly make a case there. Buffalo, to me, is just too erratic. But I think you make a good point, Josh. I would put three up there. I know there's only two spots left, okay? But I would say the Jets, the Steelers, and the Raiders are the three best teams I've seen outside of the division leaders. Buffalo, to me, they're too erratic. They're too emotional. It's like they're a Rex Ryan team. That's probably the best way to sum it up.
Great stuff, Russell, as always. We love your Monday visits. Have a great week. Enjoy Thursday night, and we'll talk next week again if you're willing.
Yeah. Oh, willing and able. So,
thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Russell.
You got it.
All right, Russell Baxter at ProFootballGuru.com. The Jets have announced, they were talking yesterday, that Ryan Fitzpatrick may have surgery on his hand after this Thursday's game. It's the non-throwing hand. He played with it. Didn't seem to have a problem, but, they might get it done because they'll have the extra week to prepare for their Week 11 game.
It'll be a good time to do it.
Let's get back to the Steelers, though, JT. This is Steelers 365, after all. According to the various statistical bureaus, Elias and such, first time in NFL history a team has had a 300-plus yard from scrimmage game and a 200-plus yard from scrimmage game by two different players in the same one. Antonio Brown with 306 all-purpose and D'Angelo Williams 225. Those two guys alone combined for 531 yards of offense. And the rest of the Steelers, 66. You heard both of them in the postgame yesterday, Josh. I guess let's hear Antonio Brown from the podium first. He had, Russell was like raving about it. There were more yards out there. Think of all the...
Oh, yeah.
The couple of missed balls. Now,
there was the one in the first quarter where Ben was looking for him, I think, down the seam. And he missed him by maybe just a step. It wasn't that far off. But it was just enough to not locate him. But if he connects on that pass, you're talking, what, almost 300 yards?
Even the pick play, the Wheaton pick play that took off yards,
right,
on the second and last drive.
Yeah, you're talking 300, maybe 350 yards receiving in a single game.
Could have broke the great Flipper Anderson all-time record, which would have been awesome.
That was a great reference yesterday when I heard a Flipper Anderson reference. That was fantastic. That happens like once every 6 years.
But it broke the Steelers' records. Courtney Hawkins had 14 catches in a game in 1998 on November the 1st against Tennessee. That was broken. Antonio Brown now with three of the top six all-time catch games in Steelers history. He had 12 in a game against the Vikings in 2013. He had 11 catches against the Ravens in a game last year. But he shatters that with 17 in this one yesterday.
Passed Louis Lips for fourth all-time in receiving yards on
yes,
the Steelers' all-time list, which I thought was interesting.
And he passed Plaxico Burress, who had the Steelers' record for yards in a game, 253. That is now at 284. Here's the great Antonio Brown speaking to the press after the game.
You know, from an individual standpoint, but the most important thing, we got a team win today, and I think it was huge for us.
Antonio, what have you learned about yourself, and how have you grown as a leader?
Well, I got to continue to lead by example and inspire the guys around me. In the midst of a ball game, in the midst of life, in the midst of everything. You know, guys on this team look towards me in certain situations. So I try to be a leader, and Ben does a great job remind me of that.
Are you more cognizant of that, given how much attention is paid to one reaction?
Absolutely.
Antonio, was Landry a little calmer this time than when he came in the last time?
I think so. He came in with a positive attitude. You could tell he was confident, and he did a good job stepping in.
He said that when he throws to you, he said with a receiver like you, he could just drop back, close his eyes, and let it go.
I don't know about all that, but that says a lot. You know, he got a lot of trust in me, and it was great to have him come in and finish the game and help us win today.
So how concerning is it if Ben has to miss a couple weeks here or working length of time at all?
Well, it's absolutely concerning. You know, Ben is our franchise quarterback, and we live and die with him. And looking forward to see how he's feeling, checking on him right after this, and hopefully he could be with us.
Did you feel like you were in the zone today? Guys talk about being like they can't be covered or they can't miss a shot. Did you feel like that today?
Absolutely. I had a good flow. I was feeling really good, positive energy. I was in the flow with them, but then every series, was getting the looks that we practiced for, and I was pretty positive today.
How much did you work on today?
It was a lot of one-on-ones today. We knew we was going to have to beat one-on-one matchup, and we knew we was going to have to catch a run.
How do you feel when you get one-on-one?
Well, may the best man win. You know, they're going to come out and cover receiver one-on-one. You got to take it personally. You got to win your matchup.
That normally doesn't happen with you, correct?
Not at all.
Can you recall a game the last time you got this much one-on-one?
I like one-on-one.
When you had the game early on, did you sense that Ben was going to keep beating you at that point? I mean, he targeted you a ton in the first half, especially.
Well, we had a good rhythm going. I was seeing exactly what we practiced for, a lot of one-on-one, and I know Ben going to give me an opportunity to win, and it was a fun day.
Did you guys out there anything?
You know, after every game, you know, you always feel like you left something out there. But I got my health, we got the win, and we're ready for next week.
Antonio,
big play that set up the field goal to get Wakefield over there?
Well, we had an under route call. Did a good job of pushing up and using Marcus Wheaton as a pick coming underneath. Landry put a great ball out in front of me. I was able to catch with my hands and get to the races.
Antonio, are you just trying to get a first down there and you turned and nobody's there?
Yeah, well, I try to be cognizant of the clock and make sure we get in scoring range. I thought the guy had a great angle and just trying to make the play.
Antonio, when you're out there, there's no Le'Veon Bell, there's no Ben Roethlisberger. Is your mindset, this is my offense now?
No, it's never about individual. You know, it's a team game and I can't do nothing by myself. The guys up front did a great job. Cody Wallace, Ramon Foster, Alejandro, Marcus Gilbert. Those guys did a great job up front. We're protecting all day. D'Angelo ran the ball well. Heath Miller was blocking and catching passes. And all the receivers did a well job. And we got to find ways to get better. And that was a team effort today.
Antonio, that being said, you've had a couple of frustrating games this year. How rewarding was it to be disinvolved and to have this kind of impact?
Well, of course, every year, you know, there's always adversity. And you've got to learn to persevere through it. But we look at this as a fresh start to a new season. It's the third quarter of the season, and we was able to get a win today, and we're excited about that.
Did you all do anything to free yourself up for one-on-ones, or is that just how they chose to play?
They mixed up coverages. You know, I think they was going to rely on rushing the passer with their front four and stopping the run with eight guys in the box and playing one-on-one on the perimeter. So we knew if we want to win this game today, we was going to win. We have to win big on the perimeter.
Perseverance, you said, did you feel that way when you fumbled the punt return, or were you really down?
No, I should have made it. You know, I didn't get a chance to return the punt early and often, so when I got the opportunity, I think I was a little excited. I should have made a better judgment on the ball if I was calling for a catch. I heard the gunner say he let the guy go, so I just got to be more smart in colleges. But over the course of the game, it's always adversity. You just look forward to the next positive thing.
You still
want to
be the great
foot punter? Absolutely. You know, I'm always willing and capable to get back there in a certain situation. And it's a exciting play of the game.
Antonio Brown here on Steelers 365, brought to you by Mr. Reuter Plumbing, with 24/7 emergency service and weekend service at no extra charge, even during Steelers games, online at Reuter2.com. Reuter, the number 2.com. He was so good in this game, Josh, and you look at the stats around the league right now. He's second to both, to only Julio Jones in both catches and yards. 69 catches, 1,002 yards already. The weird thing is he only has three touchdowns, and he didn't have a touchdown yesterday despite all those yards. I'm not sure how that was possible, but he didn't.
What makes all this funny, when you put it all kind of in a weird perspective, after the game, I mean, we did the locker room interviews, and they told us Antonio Brown was going to be at the podium, so we're waiting around for him, and he took quite a while, as Antonio Brown tends to do. So we're in the meeting room waiting for him to come out, and Mike Tomlin comes through with his kids, and he goes, "What are you guys still doing here?" And I go, we're waiting on AB. He goes, "Man, why are you waiting on AB? All I'm going to tell you is how great he is." And he walks out to everyone's raucous laughter after saying that. So it does kind of put it in perspective. But at the same time, you can't deny what you saw yesterday. It was one of the greatest performances we've ever seen. I've had to defend this quite a bit in the last 12 hours or so, or 18 hours. But I do believe he's the best wide receiver in the game right now. I don't know of a receiver that can do as much as he can do. There may be one guy that comes close, and we saw him a little bit yesterday too. Amari Cooper may come close to that. He's working in that direction. If he keeps at it, working at the way he does, he could become an Antonio Brown type guy that can beat you any way possible. But right now, there's only one receiver I know that can beat you in the red zone, that can beat you from the deep part of the field, that can beat you in the middle of the field and down the sideline. And right now, that guy's Antonio Brown.
He has more 40-plus yard catches this year than anybody in football, six of them.
Wow.
Two more than Amari Cooper, T.Y. Hilton, his old buddy Emmanuel Sanders, Allen Robinson, and Travis Benjamin of the Browns actually has four.
Wow.
It's kind of surprising.
Huh.
20-plus yard catches, Brown has 14 of them. That's second in the league to Allen Robinson of the Jags, who has 17.
And Allen Robinson has been really good this year. He's been really good. So, I mean, you got a couple of younger guys that are starting to work their way into the conversation as far as really good receivers. But what Antonio Brown is doing, for the size that Antonio Brown is, and the build that he has, what he does, when you see what Julio Jones does, you kind of expect it from Julio Jones, from the kind of size and receiver that Julio Jones is. When you see what Calvin Johnson does, you expect it from a guy that of the size that Calvin Johnson is. Same thing with Des Bryant. You expect that from a guy that size. When you look at Antonio Brown's numbers, you assume, oh man, he must be a big receiver. No, he's this guy that's like the size of Julian Edelman. And he's doing what he's doing. It's ridiculous.
Now, that being said, before the game, if I would have said, hey, Josh, Antonio's going to set Steelers records today, 17 catches, 284 yards, would you have been surprised?
No.
Probably somewhat surprised, but I might be more surprised that D'Angelo had 27 for 170.
I might have been surprised that it happened in that game.
Yeah,
but
the same
generally,
game.
Generally speaking, no, because he's capable of doing that any given night.
Yeah. And when Ben's healthy and Russell
right.
Baxter's right, this
exactly.
offense is rolling.
When Ben's healthy and you have as close to the full complement as you're going to have in an office without Le'Veon Bell, but having the full complement of receivers, especially having Martavis Bryant on one side that can go down the field and Heath Miller that can occupy the middle, no, it doesn't surprise me at all. Because if he gets the space, he's going to take advantage of it like he did yesterday.
Well, let's hear from number two of the 1-2 punch. That's D'Angelo. And he played, I mean, I saw Jordan Todman for maybe three or four snaps. I mean, wasn't much. Basically, he stayed on the field the whole game.
And those were in the second half. I think Jordan Todman, we didn't see him until like the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter. Other than that, it was all D'Angelo all the time, and it was working.
And he's reached 9,000 scrimmage yards for his career. It was a career high for him in all-purpose scrimmage yards, 225. Best ever in D'Angelo Williams' career. Here's Williams afterwards.
It was in our film study. We know that they put a lot of guys in the box to stop the run, to make you one-dimensional, and make you pass the ball. And, you know, Coach gave a challenge to our offensive line, and myself as well this week, to not let them make us one-dimensional. And I think that we went out, and we answered his call and his challenge.
How do you stay calm when you're heading to a hole like that? You see a hole, and you're like, I got to get there. How do you stay calm?
Oh, that's easy. You know, you just got to depend on the guys up front. You know, it's one of those linebackers to secondary because you're booking that the offensive line are going to take care of the big guys, and I did a great job of doing that tonight.
How much you run with Knicks? Did he play more fullback than usual? Was that Raider related?
I'm not sure if he played more fullback or not. You know, I spend most of my time, I yell the personnel and get in there, and I spend most of my time looking at the linebackers in the secondary to try to see where I'm going to run.
Ben came out and he was sitting on the bench next to you. You say anything to him?
No, I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I just asked him, was he all right? And he said he didn't know. So then he went in. So I have no idea at this point or this moment what's going on with him. But I'm going to find out after this interview.
A lot of receiving yards for you today, too, D'Angelo. What changed there?
I don't know. I guess the opportunity. I mean, we take what the defense gives us. They left me open a couple times, and, you know, Ben hit me, and, you know, that's kind of what happened.
Landry getting baptized by fire this season. How much more comfortable is he going to get as the weeks go along, do you think?
We take these reps in practice with Ben. We take these reps in practice with Landry just in case. You know, you always got to have a good insurance policy just in case things like this happen. And I think Landry is more than capable of doing the job.
D'Angelo, being 32, is that one of the things you embrace? Like, I'm the second oldest running back. I'm still good?
It doesn't matter to me, man. It's all about production. I go in and, you know, I try not to let people outwork me. You know, once I get in the weight room or once I'm on the field, I put everything out there. And it just shows on Sunday. You know, you take it from the practice field to the game field. And it does help when, you know, guys like the media doubt me. So thanks for the fuel, guys. Keep it up.
How many more body blows can this offense take?
As many as it takes to get us where we need to go. You know, I don't think they're body blows. I think that injuries, or I know for a fact that injuries are 100% in this game. You know, the injuries are going to happen. You just got to play through them and it's next man up.
I really do think that after yesterday, you mentioned it, 9,000 yards from scrimmage in his career. There were people that still have questions about this guy, even after this game, about whether or not he can do this. If he hasn't proved it by now, he's not going to. I'm really convinced at this point. That dude did everything he had to do yesterday to win that game. He did it in the passing game. He did it catching the ball. He did it blocking Alton Smith. You heard Russell Baxter say it was probably the biggest hit of the game, him taking Alton Smith out on that pass protection. And he did it running the ball. He did everything asked of him to do. And we were worried about him not being able to handle the entire responsibility of being an every down back. And he showed that he can handle it and then some.
He had short yardage runs, converted a third and one.
He did.
He had good vision, like took 2 yards when there was only 2 yards there. I guess to me, I didn't doubt any of that. I just doubted his receiving ability. Now, he only had 2 catches, but they were big ones.
They were huge.
So I guess that plus the pass protection, okay, I'm in. Just he's yeah. your guy, and you just forget about Todman and Isaiah Pede and just keep D'Angelo healthy, and you're fine.
Yeah, that's your new concern. Your new concern now isn't about who comes after D'Angelo Williams. Your concern now is keeping him healthy and making sure the offensive line keeps making holes the way they did, because I like what he mentioned about how Mike Tomlin put the challenge out to the offensive line, because the Raiders are going to stack the box and try to make that job as hard as possible. But they did everything they could to give him some room. And when he got some room, he did not miss.
Heath Miller only had 3 catches, but he was a factor as always. The way he is, you know, both phases, running game. Had a couple big blocks. He was leading out in one of the end of rounds to Antonio Brown.
I like that play when he came out in front. Quintessential Heath Miller.
Yeah, it really is.
This was a Heath. I mean, you hear about the Gordie Howe hat trick, you know, the goal, assist, and a fight. A Heath Miller hat trick is a couple of catches, a couple big blocks, and just. We talk about guys that do everything. Heath Miller might be the only tight end left that does everything. He does it all, and he does it all well. It's really, really crazy when you look at it. For me, a typical Heath Miller game isn't 7 catches for 80-something yards and a touchdown. It's a few catches here. One of them is a big catch. Maybe one gets a first down. He has a big block that springs a play, and then he does something else in the game that you didn't expect him to do. That's the Heath Miller hat trick for me.
And Heath Miller brought to you by Mr. Magic Car Wash at any of these 5 great locations: Brentwood, Castle, Shannon, Banksville Road, Upper St. Clair, and Bridgeville, and MrMagicCarWash.com here on Steelers 365, big number 83.
Is that more the guy you guys know?
Well, he had a great game. You know, certainly made huge plays for us throughout the game. I'm not sure how many yards he ended up with, but I'm sure he had well over half of our total offense. So, great game by him.
Are you seeing him emerge more as a leader these past few weeks?
I think he's done a great job of staying with it. When he misses double teams, it's difficult to go out and catch one for 2 yards every game, because oftentimes that's the defense's main goal, to shut it down. And he stayed with it. When he gets opportunities like today, he always delivers.
Lost in the shuffle a little bit with the gaudy numbers and the Ben injuries. You guys kind of needed a win, especially in the AFC. Sure. Do you think you can exhale for a second?
Well, wins are hard to come by. Anytime you win, you're going to enjoy it. But we know next week's important too, so we'll collect ourselves on the next couple days and get ready to go.
If you drove out of confidence knowing that Landry's done this before, when he had to come in that situation, and you guys were confident you could score when you had to?
Yeah, you know, we just knew he had to execute and get open the right place for him. And, he's going to get the ball to the right guys, and Antonio will do a great job of getting open. I think it was a third down play that flipped the field, and great ball by Landry.
Does anything he does, anything Antonio does, surprise you now?
Well, we've seen most of it, at least during the course of practice and in games before, but really stepped up for us today and put us out of that.
Is D'Angelo like a second starting running back, kind of an NFL older starting running back on your roster?
Well, yeah, he's been doing it for 10 years, so I would hope so. I mean, that's the way we see him. Every time he gets his opportunities, he shows it.
How has Jesse progressed since the start of camp?
Well, he's been working hard, and I think he's always been ready. It just comes down to opportunities, and he got his chance to get his feet wet today, and I think he did a great job.
If Ben is an extended period of time, how will you guys overcome that?
You know, we're just going to, whatever the circumstances are, we're going to come to work and do our best to execute the game plan. That's what happens. Certainly disappointed, you know. Hard to see him go down again, but our fingers are crossed. We're hoping for the best. But, man, you know, we have to keep playing forward and try to win the game for him.
Heath Miller has 30 catches. Only 14 shy of Gronk for the tight end lead. It's doable. If Gronk gets hurt and Ben comes back. We've seen already, Josh, when Landry gets in there, Heath Miller becomes an additional tackle. So, wouldn't expect much against the Browns. Gary Barnage is going to be the more flashy tight end in that game, but it doesn't matter.
And if it's all the same to Heath Miller, he's not even going to care. He'll do whatever it takes. You talk about players that, you know, really care about the team and care about winning games. Heath Miller is one of those guys. He just does not care how it happens. He doesn't care. As long as the team wins, he does not care if he's got 8 catches. He doesn't care if he's got 2. As long as he helps that team win, and he doesn't, and as long as he's not the guy that keeps from happening, he doesn't care how it happens. He just doesn't.
Couple snap counts in the game yesterday. Stephon Tuitt, Cam Hayward, every snap defensively.
As they should be, because they're needed.
Tuitt coming off an injury, no problems. None for Brandon Boykin, Chris Adamski points out, our Steelers reporter.
I did see some hashtag free Boykin tweets from Sunday.
But, you know, Cockrell's picking off passes in the end zone, and it's Willie Gay Island, as Tim Benz so awkwardly said earlier. And
yeah, that didn't work the first time around.
Antoine Blake had a active game. I mean, had a forced fumble. He had some flubs, but you know one thing about Antoine Blake, like there was a pass he took away Crabtree's route late in the game, forced a punt. I don't know if you remember that one. Yeah. Great position.
Antoine Blake, is the word I could use for him is opportunistic. He's going to pick his spots when he wants to be aggressive. And the one thing I've noticed is that you don't want to call it a game of possum, but he tends to be a little bit more aggressive in the second half than he is in the first half. It was the same thing in that game against Cincinnati. He made that big interception in the end zone, and he even mentioned it as much. He mentioned it on that play. He said he kind of baited Andy Dalton into that throw because Dalton they showed a coverage that Dalton really hadn't reacted to before in that game. So when they went into that coverage and they kind of baited Dalton into that throw, and all he had to do was step in front of it. So we're seeing more and more of that from Antoine Blake, and I know a lot of people get frustrated because he gives up a lot of catches. But I do think he tends to have that rock you to sleep mentality to where you don't expect him to come up and make a play, and then he steps up right when you least expect it.
Other snap counts of note, Antonio Brown didn't miss a snap. Played the entire game from start to finish. That's incredible.
You're not going to catch 17 passes without missing the snap there, Ken. You got to play ball. It kind of heightens the likelihood you're going to catch a bunch of passes, I guess.
We finally had a Boswell miss. The Boz came up empty. Could have come back to bite this team. You know, you can joke about it now, but that's a tough one. He'd been, 10 out of 10 at his start?
Right.
But wasn't perfect, and he also booted one out of bounds on a kickoff, which was not good. Gave the Raiders some life and put him at the 40-yard line. But otherwise, he did hit 2. Here's what the Boz said, or as Frank Walker Law calls him, the Boswell, after the game.
Did you want him back up 5 yards there at the end?
I mean, it doesn't really matter. There's not really that much of a sharp angle, you know, coming from college where the hashes are wider, you know, that makes it harder. But, I mean, with the hashes right on the post, I mean, it's just hit the same straight ball.
Pretty big group of moods, emotional swings throughout the entire day.
Definitely. Just, you know, had a couple miss hits with that field goal and then right after that with the kickoff and, you know, just... things happen, you just got to recover from it.
Chris, I know kickers are, you know, obviously a confident group of guys, but were you a little nervous more than usual for that game when he kicked there?
No, I definitely wanted to get back out there and kick again and show, you know, that it was just a mistake and it's not going to happen all the time and, you know, just to get everybody, you know, back on my side after that miss.
What was the mistake? Did you just pull it?
Yeah, it was just timing and rhythm. You know, I started too early, so, you know, everything was off after that.
Field wasn't giving you any trouble?
No, field was great. Grass was great.
Field was great, I guess, except for there were several Raiders who were slipping all day. And it was after the Notre Dame Pitt game the day before, so I wondered about that. But he said it was fine. I'll take his word for it. 41-yard field goal was the one he missed. At that time, it was a tie game, right? 21-all.
Yeah,
they kept
tied.
It 21-all.
And at the same time, credit the defense, because right after that, Oakland, the very first thing that they did, Derek Carr goes down the field to Amari Cooper for 21 yards.
Yep.
But they managed to hold them inside their own zone, and they didn't even let him get in the field goal range. So the defense held him and forced a punt. And that set up the big D'Angelo Williams 53-yard run on that drive after that. So if the defense does not hold Oakland, maybe that missed field goal looks bigger than it does. But instead, the defense holds water, forces him to punt, and then the offense turns that into a touchdown drive.
That pass, the next series was a 3rd and 5. It was a pass to the tight end. Will Allen came in and popped him good.
And Wofford was down on the turf. He knocked him out. Well, he knocked him out, but he gave him a good wallop.
I think Cockrell might have had it. I mean, I still think he might have had that clean.
It looked close, didn't it?
the one angle looked like he picked it. The back angle, I can see where the ball was moving, but I think it was on his arm. I mean,
it looked like he got his hand under it. At least it did from my vantage point. It looked like he got his hand under it. I thought they were going to maybe look at it and overturn it, and they never looked at it.
Anyway, that was just one sequence in the game. But back to the end of the game with Boswell's winning kick. This will be a David Todd fodder for the press conference tomorrow. Why would you ice your own kicker?
That was really strange. I don't know what happened there.
Even if you're late with the alignment, because you know, like D'Angelo went out of bounds a long way down the field after the run, just take the delay of game.
Yeah, I don't think it would have mattered because, I mean, and Boswell pointed this out, you know, when the goalpost is right on the hash like it is in the pros, it doesn't really matter as far as getting the extra space. You just got to, you know, make sure your kick is online. It's not like it's college where you have to take that really weird angle and really push it the opposite way to get it through the uprights if you're on the hash mark. So it didn't matter to Boswell. I mean, even after the false start penalty that they didn't take, that could have pushed him back. It didn't matter to him either way. So, yeah, if you're going to do anything, take the delay of game and at least you know you have space, even though it didn't matter apparently to your kicker anyway.
I mean, it's a minor thing, and I guess you don't want to be rushed. So I'm sure Tomlin was like, hey, we're scattered. I'm taking my time out.
Right, and while we say this, if they rush through it and don't take the timeout and Boswell misses, we're blasting Tomlin for not calling a timeout and rushing his kicker. So
that's probably true. It looked like, what do you do? Why would you call that there? You know,
that's the one thing, that when it comes to clock management questions, half of those questions can go either way. It could be one thing or another. That's why the whole thing with the timeouts thing against Cincinnati didn't bother me that much, because even if they use them up, you probably have around the same amount of time with maybe one timeout, kind of like they did. So it's a really a 50-50 scenario when you're talking about clock management, but that seems to be the thing that gets harped on, even in wins, apparently, which is the craziest thing I've ever heard. Team wins games and still questioning the coach's clock management. I don't understand that either. But that situation, like we said, it's really 50-50, because if they rush him and he misses, we're talking about how he screwed up. Same thing with the 3rd and 21 where they threw the ball. Well, if they run the ball, people ask, why are you running the ball at 3rd and 21? There really is. There's no winning proposition in my mind in some ways for Mike Tomlin right now, because one thing got brought to the forefront, so everybody's going to focus on that one thing every chance they get, because we've heard it enough now that it becomes an issue. What was it last year? Last year was the team wasn't prepared enough because of all the penalties. Oh, you know, terrible preparation for this team. One thing went wrong. You know, you have a fumble on the special teams. Oh, Tomlin didn't have the team prepared. It's like it's that one blanket thing that people like to just toss in because it sounds convenient at the time.
It has become cliche. It's very cliche. It's a good point, but sometimes cliches are right because they're
sometimes they are
accurate.
Sometimes they are, but in certain situations,
in this game, we're probably reaching for it.
Yeah, it's a 50-50 proposition. The clock management thing just happens to be the cliche du jour right now. But in clock management, it really is 50-50. You know how many coaches in the NFL struggle with clock management? You know how many college coaches struggle with clock management? There are still some Seattle fans that are not willing to acknowledge that Mike Holmgren botched a 2-minute drill twice in Super Bowl 40. That's how many coaches there are that are bad with clock management. It's not as easy as some people make it out to be. Because contrary to popular belief, some coaches don't have the game clock sitting in the bottom corner of their eyeballs where they can see it ticking all over, like fans can watching a monitor the entire game. It's not as easy as people make it out to be.
Garland Insurance brings Steelers 365 to you at Nationwide. Products and solutions to help you and your family build for the future. You can contact Nationwide's Rich Garland today, 412-678-8868. 412-678-8868, and find out if your money could be working harder for you. News out of Foxborough, Massachusetts. Former Pitt running back Deion Lewis, torn ACL and out for the season.
Oh, Dr. Chow was right. How about that?
Per the Boston Globe. Hmm. Oh, did Chow predict that yesterday?
Remember what he said? It was Liz Frank for Ben and ACL for Deion Lewis. He was one out of two. He was 50-50.
Is Liz Frank a degree of the sprain? Like, that is a mid-foot sprain. I think that's a dislocation or like a fracture. I guess Ben avoided the fracture or the dislocation. So it's not a Liz Frank, I guess.
Well, if it's a sprain is a minor tear. So if it's a sprain, it's probably a slight tear of a ligament. right?
Yeah, maybe just maybe Ben's it will be, is like a minor Liz Frank foot injury. Does that make sense? Like it's in the same class, it's in the genre, genus and species, but it's not a...
I'd never pretend to be a podiatrist, both figuratively and literally, if only for the smell would turn me off. But
Liz Frank midfoot injuries, I'm reading off of a medical website. Result if the bones in the midfoot are broken or ligaments that support the midfoot are torn.
There you go.
It can vary from simple to complex, involving many joints and bones in the midfoot region. So, in Ben's case, if it's only 1 to 2 weeks, the assumption is he avoided a major deal, no major fractures or dislocations.
Because, you know what, a serious Liz Frank injury, and I'm thinking back, the last time I heard of a serious Liz Frank injury, I got to go back to high school football. This was 2009 or 2010, I think it was. Wayne Capers, who plays wide receiver for Duquesne right now, by the way, was playing quarterback for Chartiers Valley. He got hurt the first or second week of the football season. And his was a Liz Frank injury. And he did not play any sports until the playoffs for Whippeal basketball. And then he finally got back to playing again. He missed the entire regular season for Chartiers Valley for basketball, got checked out by the doctors, I think it was in February, and then got back out on the basketball court in February for a Whippeal playoff game. That's how long he was out of any activity. So Liz Frank injuries are very serious.
And painful, I'm sure, and might be on crutches, and so you worry about the rehab. They might have him stay off it for a couple weeks, and then you're going to get back into Ben's record after injury and that whole thing.
It becomes real again. Let's be on the optimistic side of things. Let's say for the sake of argument, he misses 3 weeks, which means he misses Cleveland, he misses the bye, he misses Seattle. He comes back to go on the road at Cincinnati. So he gets another crack at the Bengals coming off of an injury.
Oh, no. See, that's why he's got to play in Seattle.
Knock
the rust off in Seattle.
If he's feeling good, you figure Seattle, that's what, 3 weeks? So if he's feeling good for Seattle, okay, fine, because let's be honest, do we expect him to win that game anyway?
Oh, no, they get the Colts after Seattle.
Oh, okay.
It's at Seattle, then home against the Colts.
Home against the Colts. Home against the Colts isn't bad. That's a good
better.
Time to do it.
That's
now,
better.
For the sake of argument, let's say Ben does feel okay after 3 weeks, and they're talking about playing against Seattle. Do we really expect him to win that game against Seattle with a healthy Ben before the season? Because that marked that up as a loss already.
Yeah, but aren't you looking at Seattle as not the team we saw in the Super Bowl last year?
They're
different Seattle team.
The difference between Seattle this year and Seattle in the past couple of years was Seattle was better on the road. This is not a good road team. We talked about how they barely beat Dallas. That was in Dallas. They're not a good road team. They're a lot better at home. Now, granted, they lost to Carolina at home, but Carolina's still undefeated. We're finding out Carolina's legit. Carolina's a pretty good football team. So their only home loss was to a team that's still undefeated. If this game was at Heinz Field, I'd expect the Steelers to win it because the Seahawks are terrible on the road. But this game is in Seattle, and Tim talked about it. Arrowhead Stadium's one of the toughest places to play. So is playing in Seattle. It's hard to play there, too.
They beat Dallas 13-12. It was a Dallas team with Matt Cassel at quarterback. I know what you're saying, different home and road. But
once again, terrible road team.
It's easier to say that and not analyze the game and the actual play itself.
I'm just saying that it's a lot easier to win games at home when the other team can't hear. That's a big advantage for them. It's a huge advantage. It's a lot easier when the other team can hear when you're playing against them. It makes a big difference. I believe that. And honestly, do we really feel differently about that Kansas City game if they play at Heinz Field instead of Arrowhead? If you look at the Arizona game at home at Heinz Field versus the game at Arrowhead, you don't think Landry Jones would have liked to have been able to hear during that game, given the guys he was facing on that pass rush? I know I would.
They do have Jimmy Graham, which is not good for Pittsburgh.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you're going to have to go up against Seattle on their home field and face Jimmy Graham. That doesn't look good.
We'll get a Richard Sherman, Antonio Brown matchup in that one, too, by the way.
That'll be something worth watching. That'll be fun. And whoever's playing quarterback is going to have a hard time hearing, but it'll be fun.
And Seattle is coming off a bye, so maybe that'll get them right with the world. So, who do they play this week?
That's a good question.
Didn't check their schedule. We got plenty of time. We got 3 weeks actually to see the Seahawks round into shape. It's the Browns, this
and they
week.
Got. And we talked about the Steelers having 3 straight home games. Seattle's got 3 straight home games. They can fix this very, very quickly.
They'll be in Arizona.
Yeah, they could. And Arizona, that's another thing. Arizona may not be a legit team on the road. We've seen them struggle on the road, too. So the Cardinals may have their issues.
That's a big game. Sunday night this week. Yeah. Seattle v. Arizona with the Cardinals have a two-game lead in the division.
And we talk about Seattle. If they lose this game to Arizona, playing the Steelers may not matter because they'll be out of it for the division. Because Arizona have, what, a three-game lead? The Seahawks will be playing for a wild card spot.
Yep.
And they'll have to catch the Vikings, who are 6-2. Because unlike the AFC, the NFC has, you know, wild card contenders that actually have decent records. So it's not the same scenario that the Steelers are facing. The Steelers aren't up against a 4-5 team, a 3-5 team, and another 4-4 team for a wild card spot. The NFC has 6-2 teams that might end up being wild card teams.